He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And at forward, out of some college that I forgot, this guy brags about making a right-handed layup. Everybody give it up for Jared Vanderboom. Like, it's just, it would just, that's not what I need from my, like, it's just, he shouldn't start. He should barely play. He's a 10-minute player tops, because I still don't know whether he is more detrimental to the Lakers offense or the other teams.
The issue though is he needs to be, like, if this is the roster, okay, and we're going
We should have also mentioned Bronny. Did I mention Bronny in the guard rotation?
I mentioned that he should not play because he's just not ready yet.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready yet, but I know, like, just making sure that, because I don't think I listed him, and he has an NBA contract, so we needed to list him. He's just not, I think, going to factor into the rotation this year.
He shouldn't. If he does, something went terribly wrong, or right, who knows? But no, the issue I think with Vando is, if this is the team currently constructed, we need him to be good. Like, this team, it just, they absolutely need him to be playable. I think a few years ago I mentioned that, you know, I forgot what the roster was, but I looked at it and went, Cam Reddish is going to need to play. And everyone told me I was absolutely insane. And I think Reddish started the second week. And yeah, I ran my small little victory lap around that. It wasn't an enjoyable lap, but it was one that I did run. But
it was one of those few victory laps where you're crying.
Right.
But, like, not like happy tears. You're like actually like sobbing while you're running the victory lap. Like, I was right.
Yeah, like, losers, look at that.
Me do this. Not only am I crying, but I'm running, how I normally run.
Exactly. So, that's why I think, like, Vando has to play if this is the roster, if this is the makeup, if this is the wing rotation that we are going to the season with. Vando not only has to play, he has to be good. Like, he's a really talented on ball to me, like, pest of, you can throw him on a guy, pick up full court, knock the ball away, kind of use his athletic tools to play very physical defense. He's just lost a lot of that. Yeah, I think if this is the team, Anthony, he has to play, right? Like, who do we have that can do his role unless Bazley is able to step in and is trusted in that way? But that's kind of the tough part about this team, is Vando will be relied on because there's just no one else to put in that position of a defensive wing that can guard multiple positions. Like, Laravia, maybe I have to see a little bit more in terms of what he can do defensively, but Vando fills that role, and it's something we need. As much as we laugh about it, his offensive struggles, refusal to shoot from everywhere on the court, including layups, we need his defense if this is the roster. But hopefully we don't. I just, currently constructed, Vando has to play 15-20 minutes. You just need a defensive athletic guy, and if not, it's going to be a struggle to survive on that end.
Well, whose minutes is he taking then? If he's playing 15-20 minutes, you have, between your wing positions, you have basically 48, right? Or your wing slash forward positions, you have the 48 minutes at small forward, you have the 48 minutes at shooting guard, right? So that's 96 minutes. You know that I'm not even going to lump power forward minutes in here, because you know LeBron's going to take the vast majority of those. So 96 wing minutes there. And if Vando is taking 20 of them, that doesn't leave enough for, you know, unless you have like Dalton not playing, is essentially what it is. Like, if you have Vando playing that many minutes, Dalton is not in the rotation, which I'm also, I guess, fine with. It's, would you rather die by great white shark or grizzly bear, I guess?
I would expect Dalton to not be in the rotation to start the season. And I'm also putting in that there's going to be, the Lakers aren't going to be fully healthy throughout all this. There's going to be players missing here and there. And that's where I think Vando's just I think his skill, Anthony, is he has a high motor, at least when he's right. And that's something that's useful in an 82 game regular season. Guys with high motors get paid. And sometimes they trickle off in the playoffs when everyone's playing at the same level. And he's like, hey, he's running the same speed as me. Shoot. Like, I can't, you know, I can't pass him anymore. But in the regular season, I think that matters. I would expect Dalton to be a specialized player where they throw in for offensive burst, not really a full 8 to 9 man rotation. I don't even expect Vando to be in their 8 man rotation, but 15, 20 minutes, you can like quibble with the total minute mark. I think a defensive wing is necessary. And you list our defensive wings on the team. It's Vando. It's Laravia. It's Rui. Am I missing anybody as a defensive wing? LeBron, no. But I'm removing him from this equation. Yeah, Vando, Rui, and Laravia. It's a tough place to be of who do you throw on the opposing guy's defensive wing. That's why I think Vando is important defensively.
The big thing with Vando is the paint finishing. You know, the layups need to get a lot better. The dunks, it's wild, Raj. We were marveling at this all year last year. You watch what he does to get the basketball and how athletic he looks while he's getting the basketball. And then you see what he looks like once he has a basketball in his hands, and it's night and day, right? Yeah. So it's, I still like the athleticism is still there. I know that a lot of people are kind of saying like it's really dipped because of the surgeries and stuff. And I think he's lost a step, maybe half of a step. But the biggest thing is, like, he just completely lacked any confidence last year, and he was reluctant to jump with a basketball in his hands. And he needs to be able to get up above the rim. And at the very least, if you try to dunk it, it's like Stu Lance always says, if you try to dunk it, you're going to get fouled. And I think part of it is that he doesn't want to go to the free throw line, you know, and he would rather try to avoid contact. Then try to play through it and get to the free throw line if he has to. And I think that's a big problem for him. But if he could, you know, become a decent free throw shooter so that he's not so afraid of shooting those free throws, and then also be willing to go up there and initiate contact and draw contact rather than try to avoid it, I think that would make him playable. Like I saw somebody say if he was a 35% 3-point shooter, he would never leave the court. If I was like 50 pounds lighter, I would be on ESPN. You know, that's an if that isn't even worth considering. But to me, a realistic goal for him is to become not a negative presence in the paint. Like if he could operate, like I know that they sometimes were trying him in the dunker spot. And the problem is he doesn't like to dunk. He doesn't try to get up and dunk because he's afraid to get to the free throw line. But if you put him in the dunker spot and he becomes a threat to actually dunk, now we're talking about a basketball player who makes a little bit of sense, because now you're, you know, when you're playing defense, you don't have to make up for so much on the other end. Now your defensive effort, your defensive impact can start to become a net positive rather than just making up for your negative offensive impact.
It's funny because, you know, when I hear the numbers 35% and stuff like that, Vando could shoot 48% from three and no one's going to guard him. It's just, it's, you know, so the defense,
you know, 0.7 attempt.
Right. So the defense would not change. I have a theory on this and it's interesting. I was thinking about the players in Vando's ilk that I've watched just in my time. The only guys I can really think of that are perimeter players, not perimeter, but are not centers, basically. So everyone non-center that refuse to shoot are Jared Vanderbilt and Ben Simmons. I was trying to think of other ones. I have a theory that once you refuse to shoot from one place of the court, it seeps into everything else. Once you refuse to look at the rim from this spot, now the 16-footer all of a sudden becomes, well, if I'm refusing to shoot out there, then here's not that much better, right? And so it just becomes this thing where it eventually trickles now to the basket, where Ben Simmons now is in this case where this is a superstar. This is a guy who was an all-star, decided not to take any shots from anywhere and is now scared to take layups because he doesn't want to get to the line. Same issue as Jared Vanderbilt. But yeah, if he can become a threat at the paint, which I'm not even asking for that. I'm asking for the defense to return to the point that it was. We were throwing him in on Brandon Ingram. We were throwing him on Luka Doncic, you know, when he was on Dallas, and he was a very helpful defender I remember when he got him, we were like, finally, defensive wing. Like, we've been missing one. We were throwing Patrick Beverley, Lonnie Walker on these types. Mm-hmm. We have our own defensive wing, and that has completely dropped off along with the offense. That was already at a very low baseline. But to me, I just want the defense to return. Everything else is a cherry on top to me. I'm not expecting Vanderbilt to become some elite finisher around the rim, have a floater game, corner, three-pointer, all that. That ship has sailed for me. That is far into the ocean. I think the defensive stuff can still be something real. And I saw it last year. Somebody got in his ear and told him, you are the enforcer on this team. And he took that to heart too much. He was beefing with Julius Randle and Naz Reid and Anthony Edwards in game one before he stepped on the court. It's just, let's be productive first. But yeah, that's where I'm at with Vanderbilt. I still think there's a defensive player in there. The offensive player, I feel like, has left a long, long time ago.
All right, let's talk about forwards, which there's some overlap there with wing and forward and stuff like that. But forwards for right now are basically LeBron. I would lump Rui into that group, right? He'll play some power forward. I would lump Vando into that group. He should be playing power forward basically only. I guess he plays some. He's in that weird spot, but there's that overlap there. The forwards, your starting point is LeBron, and that's a pretty damn good starting point. And I would say this is one of those spots where, like, your starting point with the guards were Austin and Luka. You don't need a whole much more to be considered good at that spot. In this case, your starting spot is your starting point is LeBron, and your backup is Rui. That's a good. That's a strength. You know, their forwards I would consider a strength.
Yeah, strength. Obviously, starting with LeBron is a strength. I think the context of Rui on this roster makes it more of a weakness, right? Because I think what he's good at obviously ties in with LeBron. I think he and LeBron play the same position, basically as fours that need to play the four position. They can't play the five for long stretches, and they aren't mobile enough to play the three anymore night to night. And that's where I think that position, to me, we need more of an athletic player. Even the team build, Anthony, around a Luka Doncic team versus an Anthony Davis team is different to me. Like, you now have your shot creation coming from the guard spot, less from the center spot, right? We would run a lot of post-ups and stuff through AD. Now all your stuff is coming from the guard spot. That means all the other positions, to me, you need to be a plus defensively and, you know, good enough offensively. And that's where, to me, I think Rui is a fine four. But you mentioned the LeBron minutes are going to be at 38, 37, you know, whatever they're going to be at. That leaves Rui most of his minutes at the three position. And so that's to me is where I have trouble saying this is like a strength of the team, even with LeBron being part of it. And it's why, again, I've just been really advocating go get a wing that can play somewhat two-way. Wiggins is the only guy that I can think of right now. But even like a Marcus Smart, I would be open to on a buyout type situation if you can go grab him. I know he's not a forward per se, but basically plays that three and D and three position. But yeah, that's where and again, I'm gonna use this time to just again continue to promote, like, this is where I think Bazley is so fascinating. More athletic than Vando, way better, you know, his ball handling's on a different universe. A guy that's averaging 14 a game, and you can get him, I think, on a minimum deal. But if you don't have him, I think you're just athleticism is extremely down, even with LeBron James highlighting this group. You mentioned, who else did you mention in the four spot? I guess I would put Vando here, essentially. I think Vando can play three because his offensive role is meaningless. But LeBron, Rui, Vando, am I missing a four within that? I think that's it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Luka technically, you know, because he guards that player type.
Good point.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
All right. I'm gonna address this dude once because this dude just won't drop it. This Mixel Fix or whatever your name is. You keep on saying that like Austin shouldn't start and Austin this and Austin that. And I keep on getting this nonsense. And it's like, all right, you saw this guy against a brutal matchup where he was your point of attack defender going up against Anthony Edwards during his ascendancy. Austin was also dealing with a foot thing that apparently wasn't letting him walk right between games. And like all this dude did last year was drop 25-5. Look up the number of players who dropped 25-5 last year. It's just fucking crazy, man. It's crazy to sit here and say like this. Oh, no way you can start Austin Reeves. No way. What it comes down to is a lot of people, like I think a lot of people overrate Austin because he's white. And I think there's a lot of people who underrate Austin because he's white. And there, and I think what's going on here is look, would I prefer the Lakers have a better option here who is a little bit better than Austin and Austin could come off of the bench? Yeah, that'd be great because then you'd have a freaking super team. But that player isn't available to the Lakers. And if you're basically like not starting Austin for the sake of starting Jared Vanderbilt, who I'm not convinced is an actual NBA player. I'm not kidding. He's not good enough defensively to make up for how terrible he is offensively. What are we doing here? Start Vando instead of Austin. Just like it's just nice that some people just walk around with an I'm stupid tattoo on their forehead. Stop with that nonsense. He played a bad series. He was fucking great last season. Like, yeah. What are we doing here?
I think if you go back and look, Austin had his moments in that series as well that would be forgotten. I feel like a lot of clutch threes in game four, game three is what it was. You talked about he was hurt as well going through that. You mentioned the numbers 25-5. And I keep trying to point out, we did this in this group, but Lakers starting backcourt defensively is not Austin and Luka Doncic. Luka does not guard the other team's two guard, right? He is guarding a forward, a guy he can stand, who's standing in the corner that he can kind of technically rest on defense, or, you know, if you put it nicely, glass half full, he's using his smarts to be an off ball type defender. I was having this argument with people in Vegas, Anthony, but I think Austin's he's a fine on ball chaser defender. We do this thing where defense, we just group it all into one bucket. Are you good? Are you bad on defense? We don't do that with offense. With offense, we're like, are you a good shooter? Can you cut? You know, do you have ball handling? Defense, we're like, are you good or bad?
Talk about defense.
Yeah, so that's where I think Austin's a really good chaser on defense. You could throw, like, we put him on Steph Curry. I'm not saying he shut down Steph, but I felt like we were able to at least survive with him in that role. Does he get picked on sometimes on switches? Yeah, guards who have a high offensive responsibility get picked on, you know, with switches. We saw it with Luka. We'll see it with Austin. People try to take away their legs. But, yeah, this idea that they can't play together, I mean, I find that ludicrous. And you're seeing some of that this summer.
It's also, Raj, part of the reason people think of Austin in a certain way is because Luka got there. They had never played together and they handed the keys to Luka. And sure. I'm not saying that it was either my show or the, I think I did Real GM Radio yesterday with Wes. No, it was on my show that I said this. I actually think the offense got worse when Luka got to the Lakers, just in terms of what they allowed themselves to do and their production. I would like to see the numbers and all that stuff. We could look at like the Lakers offensive rating before and after Luka, but I'm just talking about options. And before Luka got there, they had this identity and it was a heavy pick and roll identity. And it was Austin sometimes on the ball, and it was LeBron sometimes on the ball, and sometimes it was with AD as the fulcrum of the offense operating at like the high post. And they had all these things, and it's because they had an entire offseason and an entire training camp, an entire season to that point to iron out a lot of those kinks. And then by the time that Luka got there and they had a few months to put together an offense before they get to the postseason, and they played against a Minnesota team that was defending their asses off. Like that offense that was once a fairly like modern concept offense, conceptual offense. It was a diverse offense. It became Luka ball, and it became Luka dominating the ball, holding the ball for 17 seconds and either shooting with the next 5 or so seconds after that, or passing off a grenade to somebody, and sometimes it was Austin, sometimes it was LeBron, And I hated the type of offense that the Lakers were running. And I think a lot of times that is reflected poorly on LeBron's playoff performance. And it's really reflected poorly on Austin's playoff performance, especially offensively. And if we get any kind of interaction between LeBron and Luka and Austin in this upcoming season, a lot of the people who were like, Austin can't play with Luka, are going to look really stupid. But if we don't see that, and if it is just straight Luka ball for all 82 games next year, then okay. Then yeah, if you're turning Austin into a 3-and-D defender, then you should probably just employ a 3-and-D defender. But first, while Austin is on your roster, you should see if you could run an offense diverse enough to take advantage of his strengths too.
Yeah, and I think he was one of the people that was harmed the most by not playing a big man, right? A lot of when we went to our small ball lineups, a lot of it was switched by Minnesota, and I just thought you didn't give him a ball screen pairing, and that hurt Luka as well. But obviously, I think Luka's just more of a creator in isolations, and even then, he was struggling in the fourth. But yeah, I think all that stuff played together, and that's why I think Ayton will be helpful, not just for Luka, but I think for Austin as well as a ball screen partner, a guy to run pick and roll with. That's where I think Austin has taken his biggest offensive jump. So, yeah, just ludicrous takes over the summer. I mean, in terms of who fits with who, in terms of what the roster is and, you know, how they struggled in the playoffs. I think people are forgetting how incredible of a second half Austin had, not just the 25-5. I think it was like over 40% on pull up threes, almost a 90% free throw shooter, right? Got to the line, bunch of clutch shots throughout the second half of the regular season. All that forgotten because of a few games in the playoffs, which I understand. That's the place where you are judged.
And it's the last most. Song.
Yeah. So we'll see.
All right. Let's move on to the center spot. And it's a lot better now. I think, you know, based on listening to LFR, listening to Jovan, talking to people in Vegas, I think I'm probably the highest person on DeAndre Ayton right now out there. And it all just comes down to very cynical. This dude wants to continue making a lot of money playing basketball. And the only way that he'll be able to do so is to have himself a career year this season. And I think he's still capable of it. I went back and watched the stuff that he was doing when he was engaged in Portland last year. And I'm not saying that he's going to be fully engaged for 82 games. He's never going to do that. But can you get an engaged and healthy DeAndre Ayton for 60, 65, 70 of those games? And if you do, you are now worlds better than you were last year. I really love the idea that he's a lob threat, but not just a lob threat. He's a paint finisher. So he can punish switches. If he gets a pick and roll and it's not a dunk, it's not a miss, right? Like if the Lakers would have employed Clint Capella and he wasn't getting a dunk, it was a miss. If Jared Vanderbilt is in a pick and roll and he doesn't have a wide open dunk, and maybe sometimes even when he does have a wide open dunk, it might be a miss. With Ayton, he's an elite finisher. I think he's going to get to the free throw line far more frequently than he did with Portland. And like I know, like Pete the other day was like, you know, the difference between getting your butt kicked by the uber physical Minnesota Timberwolves team that we saw last year and something else is DeAndre Ayton. I allowed him to push back on that. I actually think now, I think it is going to be a big difference. So the center spot, it's still not where it needs to be because I don't think Jackson Hayes is very good. And beyond him, it's two-way guys.
Christian Coloco, yes. Yeah.
Who's playing really well, by the way. We're recording this while the Lakers and Celtics are playing in a summer league game. And Coloco has been looking really good. But yeah, I would say I would consider them slightly below fine, but I would still say that they have like there's a very clear path to being slightly above fine.
Yeah, got to speak to Danny Meringue, who covers the Blazers, also met Sean Hykin in Vegas, and they both said very glowing things about DeAndre Ayton, at least as a person. I'm hopeful knowing that he's able to contribute I just think his level of offense is just at a different level than we had got that second half of the season with Luka Doncic. I mean, going from Jackson Hayes to DeAndre Ayton is a canyon size gap in terms of what they can do when they can catch the ball, where they can catch the ball, where you can throw it, how you trust their hands. Jackson Hayes, obviously a great vertical spacer, but that if he's not catching it above the rim, you really don't want the ball anywhere near his hands. But DeAndre Ayton is not that guy. Now, that comes with a lot of other things. That means when Ayton is open, that ball better be there. Yeah. Because he can say whatever he wants right now within the game. That ball is not there. There's going to be some effects of that. But his numbers, Anthony, I wrote about this as well. His numbers are absurd. Last year, 7 straight years of double-doubles, but incredible finisher. You look at the NBA.com maps, they have the green for, you know, when a player shoots well from that area, red when they're not. His hole inside the paint is just green. It's just just extremely talented offensive player, jump hook, mid-range jump shots. Sometimes takes too many mid-range jump shots, but I think to your point, the offensive ceiling of that team, I think, can really hit another level. And my favorite part about him, and I think this is the part that people miss on the Minnesota series, because it's very easy to look at Rudy Gobert, who had 50 and 30 rebounds, whatever it was, in game 5 to close us out. I still will not die, but, you know, we'll live on the hill that we lost that series offensively because we could not score. And I think part of that is because we had no counter to switches. So they can just have Jaden McDaniels guard Rui Hachimura, right, who was the screener for Luka in a lot of the possessions. You can't put Jaden McDaniels on DeAndre Ayton. That's just something you can't do when Ayton is engaged and is, you know, looking to score. That is someone that he can really bully and put in the post. And there's a lot of wings like that. He did that against us in 2021. We switched Caruso on Ayton. We switched KCP on DeAndre Ayton, and he absolutely ate us alive that series, even before AD got hurt. So that's the hope. I think Jackson as a backup, I'm going to use the F word you don't like, but I think that's fine. Like, I think Jackson as a backup is fine in a regular season stance. We'll see in the playoffs. But and then hopefully I think Koloko is just a solid third big that I hope that they learn from last year and keep him with the team and kind of growing with the roster instead of, you know, being added too late and never really getting a chance and then promising Alex Len a spot and never using it. So hopefully never see Alex Len again. I'm sure a nice guy, but respectfully,
Ross obviously just disappeared. Alex Len.
Respectfully, basketball wise, you know, I'm sure he's a nice person, I think. But Christian Koloko, yeah, I think is just a better basketball player today and will be next season, and hopefully they keep him along for the ride as well. I do think he's eligible for one more year on a two-way. So
yeah,
the Lakers want to financially save some. They can go ahead and offer him another two-way. Now, whether Christian Koloko wants that is an interesting conversation as well.
I don't know how many options Koloko has still. But
yeah,
it should be updated here. Unfortunately, Raj, your dude is being wheeled off in a wheelchair.
Who?
Baisley. Baisley went for a spin move and didn't get up. So,
oh man.
Unfortunately, that's just tough. Obviously, prayers out to Baisley. Hope he's okay. He's had such a brutal career. He looked really good. He was a first-round pick by OKC, which is normally a good indicator of what you're capable of. He went to Denver, looked really good for Denver. Those guys loved him over there. And then he, I think, tore his ACL, right? Really wrecked his knee in a really ugly injury, too. It was one of those where it was like, ugh, you know, like as you were seeing it.
Yeah.
And now here he is hurt again. So, you know, prayers out to Baisley. Hope he's okay.